Cast of the Champions, episode 10. Welcome. My name is Mike, your host. Good to be back here again. Got a lot of shit to go over today. I'm going to go over Extreme Rules pay-per-view, Raw from last night, and also kind of go in real hardcore detail about Carolina Rebellion, the music festival I alluded to last week on my show last week. And it was a good time. Overall, it was a good time. My wife went. We had fun. But, I'll get to that in a little bit. But first, before I do, you can get me on Twitter at Cast of Champion or at Mike Spiesman. Again, if you don't know how to spell my fucking name by now, just look in the comments. It'll be there. Also go to facebook.com/Cast of the Champions, all one word. And, yeah, that's about it. Don't forget to check out the NitroCast, Paul's show. My buddy Paul, he's doing his... He's looking to the WCW Nitro time. He's about in 97 right now, midway 97 right now. So, don't let him tell you anything about midgets because he gets offended about midgets. So, just remember that. So, yeah. Extreme Rules. First off, I want to say, before I get to Extreme Rules, we'll talk about SmackDown first. Was not able to get SmackDown because I actually left for the festival, which was in Concord, North Carolina at the Charlotte Motor Speedway on Friday morning. So, and then of course, you know, we were camping there, didn't have any cable, so I wasn't able to watch SmackDown. I did record it, but I did read what happened. Didn't look like anything special really happened to it, so I won't go back. I'll delete it. Sunday night, at the actual pay-per-view, I was actually at the concert again. And that was when we were at the final few performances, you could say. And that was, I didn't get a chance to really, I missed a lot of the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, but I did catch a Wi-Fi signal while I was at the campground, at the concert. And there were some bands playing that I didn't really give a fuck about, like 311. I actually watched the majority of the John Cena match during 311's shitty little play, and then while Five Finger was playing, I wasn't able to get a signal, so I stayed on I didn't want to get a signal. I was paying attention to Five Finger Death Punch, but then during Kid Rock, I was kind of back and forth with Kid Rock in the main event, but I did go back and watch the show. So that's the good thing about the WWE Network pay-per-views. They broadcast immediately following, and they don't for the Raws. The Raws, you gotta wait a month and a half, it's looking like. So anyways, besides that, the pay-per-view itself, I want to say I got every match right except for one. The only match I was iffy about, which was the Shield and Evolution, but my predictions were right on. I know I can't, except for that one, but I can't really say anything about it because it was a pretty predictable outcome. Most of the matches was pretty predictable. It's just, did the in-ring product deliver for everybody? That's the thing we were kind of wondering about. So, without any further ado, I will get into the Extreme Rules. First off, the first match on the pre-show, Paul texted me during, while I was at the concert. I missed the pre-show. Obviously, I was at the concert, and he told me that the WLC match was a lot of fun, had some good spots in it. It was a good match, and I thought he was joking at first, but then he said, "Are you serious? Check it out." So I went back and I watched it, obviously, and they had Micro Cole. The announcers were even midgets. They had Micro Cole, Jerry the King Smaller, and JBL Lee, whatever the hell his name was, WBL or whatever the hell it was, and that was pretty funny. They even had a midget referee. But besides that, the match was pretty good. I mean, they had some spots. Everybody went through tables. It was really good. A couple, good table spots. And then at the end there, El Torito gets the win by putting Hornswoggle through a table. So, to me, I wasn't even going to watch it until Paul told me I needed to. So, and then it was one of the top four matches of the night. So, you can't, the eight matches there were. So, you can't really say anything bad about it. So, but yeah. Worth a watch. If you haven't watched it yet, go back and watch it, because it was a lot of fun. Anytime you get that many table spots, and it wasn't just the midgets going through the tables, it was the big guys going through it too. course, there was a lot of joking in it. You know, Hornswoggle trying to jump through the ropes and bouncing off because he has no vertical. But, you know, they had the tiny chairs, the tiny tables. They had the going through the small announce table. It was fun stuff. So definitely recommend watching that one again. First match of the night was the triple threat match between Cesaro, Jack Swagger, and Rob Van Dam. Really good match. And it was an elimination match. It was an ECW-style match where it was no disqualification, which they never really said it was no disqualification, but it was. And it was an ECW triple threat match where an elimination happens, and then you go down to one-on-one. So, which, in my opinion, all triple threat matches need to be like that. Swagger went out rather quickly, and then after that, Van Dam and Cesaro just put on a great match, and Cesaro let him get in the win. And then you see on Raw, they actually set up that they're going to continue their feud and probably have another match at Payback. So look forward to seeing that. The next match was a total throwaway match. Alexander, the most boring character in wrestling right now, Rusev, and against R-Truth and Xavier Woods. And the only thing that makes Rusev watchable is Lana. Because right now, I was even talking to my wife about this, Lana's probably the hottest chick in WWE right now. If you look at some of her old pictures before she actually got into wrestling, she's a knockout. And she still is a knockout. So she makes everything watchable. She did a little thing where they're dedicating the match to Vladimir Putin or whatever the fuck his name is. And then R-Truth tried dedicating the United States of America, which he just shut his mouth. And of course, Rusev wins in a squash. So don't watch that one again. Next matchup was the Intercontinental Championship match. The number one contender via the Intercontinental Tournament was Bad News Barrett and Big E. These guys put on a pretty good, solid match. Had about 8 minutes. And, of course, predictability. They don't think they would have done the tournament if you didn't know that was going to happen, but Bad News Barrett gets the win. So Bad News Barrett gets the title. Hopefully we get some more credibility with that belt now. The next matchup, and this is where everything started going a little loopy, because everybody automatically assumed, myself included, that the Shield and Evolution were going to headline the pay-per-view. Well, nope, they were the fifth match on the card, and they still had three matches after that to go through. But that doesn't mean that wasn't the match of the night, because it was. The Shield and Evolution, there are some really good spots in it, good storytelling in it. The Shield surprised, and they got the win after a spear and a Superman punch from Seth Rollins to Batista, and they get the surprise win. But also, this is not the end of this feud, as we'll talk about in Raw a little bit later. But solid match. That was a match of the night. So there's that. The next match was Bray Wyatt and John Cena, and it was an okay match. The only reason that it got good was at the end when Cena was about to walk out the door. How many times in a cage match have you actually seen somebody walk out the fucking door to win? And this was about to happen twice, the way Bray Wyatt one was walking out the door. But Cena's about to crawl out to the door, and next thing you know, the Wyatt little thing happens, and then lights come back on, and there's a little boy sitting there with some demonic voice. He starts singing. He's got the whole world in his hands. And a really demonic voice. Freaking creepy as hell. And Cena was just startled. He walked back, turned around, walked into Sister Abigail's kiss, and then Bray just walked out of the cage and won. So he wins the match by walking out of the cage, which you never see. All right match with a phenomenal ending, because it keeps the John Cena losing his only fan base, you know, thing going alive. So, but yeah, there is that. The next match was Paige and Tamina Snuka. And when I watched this match, I watched it while I was at the concert. It was right before Kid Rock came out, and actually when he started to come out, and solid. It looked pretty decent. I didn't really go back and rewatch it. I just kind of went back and watched the ones I missed. So it didn't get a lot of good reviews, but you know, when a Divas match is finally getting a little bit of time, they're actually putting on something. So, you know, and Paige and Tamina Snuka are two of the best workers actually in the Divas division. And Paige got the win, no surprise there. So Paige wins. Then the main event, which we didn't see coming, Daniel Bryan and Kane, in what was a pretty damn good Extreme Rules match. They fought to the back, which was cool, and then they did the whole thing where Daniel Bryan took a crowbar to Kane's head and knocked him out, and then he puts him on a forklift and, you know, lifts him up and into the ring, and then he ends up doing his gonna kill my wife someday Chris Benoit headbutt, and which, you know, I think they quit doing that move, by the way, but, you know, whatever. And you know, back and forth. We got a flaming table action, and Kane goes through the flaming table, comes back in the ring, walks into a knee. Yeah, Daniel Bryan wins, which we knew was going to happen. And just when he thought that this was the end of the feud, something else was going to happen, Kane's music hits. Kane sits up, the flames go off, and looks like we're not done with this feud. So, I found out later why it was kind of this happened, but I'll talk about that later. So, part of my show later on, a little Batista bitch news. That's what I label here on my outline, which I actually did an outline this week. So I should follow some kind of semblance. So, but yeah, that was Extreme Rules. Was it as good as WrestleMania? I'll give it a B. Yeah, I gave WrestleMania a B+. But, you know, some good hardcore matches. You know, you had the throwback ECW triple threat match. The WLC, which surprised the hell out of everybody. You know it did. And then the six-man tag, which kind of turned into Extreme Rules match itself. And then, of course, you had the World Heavyweight title match. So, you know, good match. The throwaway match was a handicap match. Like I said, you shouldn't have a handicap match in a pay-per-view anyway. Good pay-per-view. It was good showing after. It was some shitty storytelling leading up to it, build for, I should say. But it delivered in the end. It's what you pretty much expected. But that was it. And that leads us into Raw the next night. I was back in time to watch that from start to finish. Part of me is wondering why, but I read ahead of time that Dean Ambrose had to defend his U.S. title finally in a 20-man battle royal, which really, it's not fair, but, you know, in the long run, he loses his belt to Sheamus, who I also actually read earlier in the day, they're going to be making him a heel, which the way he kind of won the match and started coming on, he kind of came off kind of heelish at the end there. So hopefully it is, you know, he does turn heel, because I like Sheamus as a heel better. I think he's just more entertaining. I can't stand this guy as a face. I'm sick of him. I never liked him as a face to begin with. So hopefully he turns the heel. But the bigger story is that Dean Ambrose finally lost his belt after 2 weeks short of a one-year reign, which is okay, because he wasn't defending the damn thing anyway. And the reason he's never defending the belt is because the Shield is always in some kind of storyline as a team, and not in the singles capacity, and that's why he never defended the belt. So it's not like, you know, it was just bad storytelling. I mean, not maybe bad writing by the writers. That's the only thing I can say. But now they put it on someone, an established singles guy, who could maybe turn heel with it, make it into something, like they're trying to do with the Intercontinental title. Or, you know what, you merge them, and then that's it. I don't know. We'll see. But this is good to see him finally lose it. After the match, we have one of the things that happened during the match, I wanted to mention this, was it pissed me off. I know it pissed off the crowd, but Dolph Ziggler, who I thought had opened, who I actually thought was going to be one of the final four, gets eliminated by the fucking stupid ass Cobra by Santino. And of course, everybody hated that. So what the hell is going on with Ziggler? It's a anomaly every week. We're trying to figure the fuck out. But yeah, he got eliminated by Santino Marella. Shitty way, stupid fucking Cobra. But then Triple H comes out and says they will have a 6-man tag team match for the main event against the Wyatt family, which, hey, I'm okay with, because they always put on a decent match. But when's enough going to be enough for that one? That's all I'm going to say about it. Next matchup was RVD and Cesaro. RVD was supporting a Shiner, I guess, from when he landed on the trash can, when he was doing his 5-star on the trash can. He kind of nailed his eye. He's even bleeding from it. He came out sporting a Shiner. Then Paul Heyman came out and did his whole little "My Client Brock Lesnar Conquered a Streak of WrestleMania." Yeah, it's not going to get old. It won't get old. People are getting annoyed with it, but you know what? He's going to say it every week, every time you see him, until Cesaro gets sick of it and they set up the Cesaro and Brock Lesnar match at SummerSlam. That's my prediction, but I'm just saying. It's going to happen every week, so get over it. But the match ends with Cesaro refusing to let go of beating up Van Damme in the corner. He gets disqualified. Heyman ends up pulling Cesaro away, warning he might get spent if he doesn't. So But yeah, it's just continuing their feud, so they're probably gonna have a match at Payback. Good to see it. Give them a little build. There's a higher tier mid card storyline that we can have. So it'd be nice. Next up, Bray Wyatt comes out, does a promo. He talks about how he is a monster. He ends up finishing it. A couple of the things he said is, the world must be burnt down so it can be reborn. And he also finished it off by saying he is a god. So, of course, just another spectacular Bray Wyatt, promo. So we'll see if it looks like they're going to continue the Cena feud. I know he was supposed to be on main event because he was on Raw last night, which shocked the shit out of me. But Cena's supposed to be on main event tonight. After I'm done here, I'll actually go and watch it on the network. Check that out and see what he had to say. And then I guess the spoiler, I just got a note on my phone. It's spoilers for SmackDown. I'll probably check those out before I watch the show on Friday. If I watch it. I actually go back to work on Friday. Boo. But yeah, so there's that. The next match is Cody Rhodes versus Ryback. It's just a match. I still don't like Ryback ends up winning after he puts a modified version of Shell Shock on Cody Rhodes after a distraction from Goldust, mild distraction from Goldust. It's leading up to Cody Rhodes and Goldust because they're gonna break up and they're gonna have a match. And then hopefully Goldust will be gone because I can't stand Goldust. I'm not a big fan of his. Plus he blocked me on Twitter. Fuck him. It is what it is. All right, I don't even want to talk about the next segment was the Cinco de Mayo celebration. They completely shit on the whole freaking Hornswoggle match thing. I don't even want to, talk about that piece of shit because I guess they're trying to go off of the hype they had the night before, and it was a total shit. So, I got to talk about it. Next matchup is Kofi Kingston and Alexander Rusev, and Kofi got some moves in this. So, it wasn't just a basic Rusev squash match. I guess the Raiders remember Kofi used to be kind of a guy. And, of course, Lana's out there talking beforehand and dedicates it again to Putin. And, Rusev ends up getting the win. Next matchup was Daniel Bryan and Alberto Del Rio. Also, earlier in the night, they're showing Daniel Bryan and Brie in the back and Steph came in and said, "You guys should stay here. Don't leave." And then Kane's mask kept showing up everywhere. And as they tried to leave, they got in the car. And then, Stephanie says, "If you don't perform like you're supposed to, I'll have to strip you of your WWE World Heavyweight Championship." Just horrible act. This whole thing was just horrible acting by everybody, including Daniel Bryan. I ain't gonna lie. I'm a Daniel Bryan fan. You all know that. I mean, he's not my favorite wrestler, but I was just annoyed by the acting in this. It was just too much. Why is he scared of this guy? A guy he's faced many times. He beat last night. So he ends up winning the match against Alberto Del Rio. And then the Kane's music hits after the flames go off in the ring. And they run out to the car. And as they're getting in the car won't start. Daniel Bryan goes to check why the car's not started. Sees the wire unplugged. Closes the hood and... And then there's, I called up my wife too. I was like, "Kane's, he's gonna pull that hood, and Kane's gonna be in the back seat. Kane's in the back seat." My 4-year-old daughter even asked me, "Where is he?" Like, "He's in the back seat, honey." And of course, there he is. He grabs Brie, and he ends up getting out. And then looks like they're gonna hit him with a car, but they don't. And blah 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 blah. So good match, bad storytelling, horrible acting. Hope this ends the next pay per view after this match. Now I kind of get into it a little bit, but supposedly what was supposed to happen is they're supposed to set up the Daniel Bryan's next opponent for Payback, which is supposed to be Batista. Payback, he's going to be in WrestleMania, so it's supposed to be Batista. But apparently Batista didn't want a job because Batista's about to take some time off to go film a movie, another D-rate movie. And so he didn't want to do the job to Daniel Bryan. So Kane gets a little more time in the limelight, and that's why we're stuck with this. And it's not really helping Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan's going to save his title run by having good matches because that's what he had at Extreme Rules, was a good match. So that's my hope. Next up is a Intercontinental Championship rematch between Big E and Bad News Barrett. And Bad News Barrett says something about the deformed slob in the audience must not have been worthy of a champion. Might have been worthy of a champion like Big E, but they're not worthy of... They need some serious cosmetic surgery to be worthy of the new champion, Barrett. So, know, he ends up getting the win with a. Now, here's my question too. Something I love Bad News Barrett, but I hate this bull elbow thing he does because it's just a fucking elbow. There are guys who, in every match, throw 10 elbow shots on people and it doesn't do nothing. But this one elbow is gonna knock everybody out. So I don't know. I guess he's got the Lex Luger loaded freaking metal plate in his elbow, and that's how he knocks people out. I don't know, bull hammer, whatever the fuck it's called. Either way, I like what Bad News Barrett. It's better than his old finisher, I'll give you that, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, as long as he brings some legitimacy back to the Intercontinental title, because I'm an old-school wrestling fan, I'd love to see that thing get back up there. So, next up, Zeb Coulter came out and said it was actually May 5th, not Cinco de Mayo, and then Adam Rose comes out with his party goers, and I had not watched a lot of Adam Rose on NXT, but I've been looking forward to it because his vignettes leading up to him coming have been hilarious. Now, this is a part where I need to mention now just how, I mean, I'm from New York. I'm from Jamestown, New York, originally. I lived in New York for the past 6 years up until I moved here about a month ago in North Carolina. But this Albany crowd was total shit. They didn't know to pop for anything. They did the CM Punk chants, which I don't know why people are still doing. He's not coming back. He's an asshole. He doesn't care about you. Quit chanting for him. He's not coming back. They were quiet for the good shit and loud for the shit they shouldn't have been, you know, there for. It was a horrible crowd, and they proved it here. Here out comes Adam Rose. He does his little thing where he talks. He's a little sucker. I love the guy. I think he's hilarious. And then he kind of gets the better of a Swagger and Zeb. So basically, his first match is going to be on Raw next week in Swagger. You know, he calls his people that come out with him the Rosebuds. So I got a lot of hope for this guy, but this shitty crowd has kind of killed his coming out. And then we got the Shield and the Wyatt match. Decent match, not one of their best ones. This is Shield's about to win for the first time against the Wyatts. Or did they win a main event match? I think they won a main event match. I can't remember right now. They come out, get the distraction, and then Bray Wyatt ends up getting the win. Then afterwards, they get a beat down on everybody, and then that's how it ends. They get the beat down on the Shield, and they look strong for the end there, and that's about it. So, but yeah. Mediocre Raw. I was okay. I mean, I watched from start to finish. You know, so it was all right. I mean, it was kind of a throwaway show, but I mean, the bad acting for the whole Daniel Bryan thing kind of took away from it, and the fact they kept doing it. You know, hopefully they just play his angle out and it's done after this. Excuse me, I need a drink there. So, but before I'm gonna get on before I get to. The Carolina Rebellion recap. I'm gonna have this Batista bitch news. Like I said, he was supposed to be in a match. He decided he didn't want to, so he's gonna pull CM Punk. But he's gonna hang. I can't say pull CM Punk. He's actually there. He's on Raw and everything. But evidently he's not happy with the way the company's treating him and blahzy 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 blah. You're a part timer, dude. You're a D-rated actor. You're not The Rock. So suck it up. But. Like I said, if they'd have brought Batista back around Survivor Series time frame, I'd have been okay with him winning the Royal Rumble and being in the main event at WrestleMania. But this whole thing has just not worked out because the crowd shit on him so much because they don't want this guy. Like I said, he came back earlier, he might have been okay. But whatever, it is what it is. There is one more little WWE tidbit that I will get to, but I'm going to go to Carolina Rebellion first. Basically, this festival was in Concord. It was in the Rock City portion of the campground area, so it wasn't in the actual, you know, the racetrack. It was our campground. It was down by the dragway, and then you had to kind of go across the street and go up the hill to where the concert was. Now, I said before, I've been to Rock on the Range in Columbus, Ohio the last 6 years, so this is my first time. Well, and before that, when I was stationed in Germany, I did 2 years at Rockin' Park, which even after this is still, the Rockin' Park has been the best festival layout, set up, put on, you know, how they conducted it that I've been to. These three festivals I've been to, Rockin' Park hasn't, even with this Carolina Rebellion one. But Carolina Rebellion, overall, I would put that number two right under Rockin' Park of the three I've been to. Even though I've been to Rockin' Range six times, you know, six of the 7 years I've had it. I'm gonna miss my first one this year. Still kind of sad, but the layout was so much better. And that's some notes I'm gonna get into here in a minute. But first, I'm gonna go over the bands and everything that I listened to. Some of them I kind of ditched out on because I had no interest. The first night we got there Friday, got in easy, got the camper set up, and then the pre-party was actually in the campground I was staying in, not the Rock City, which is across the street. This was like it was actually about, I don't know, just a little bit away from where my camper actually was. So the third band I actually didn't want to watch. We went back to our camper and I could hear them clear as day from sitting outside in my camper. But the first band was a band called Cadaver Dogs. They're a two-man band from, I think, Florida, I think they were from. Music is a little bit lame. The lead singer looked really, really white trashy. I think he had a mullet and everything going. Oh, they're from Columbus. That's right. I put down my notes right here. They're from Columbus. So they're all right, but you can see why they were on the little shitty stage for the pre-show. But good way to kick it off. The next band on that little stage there was Eve to Adam, which is one I was looking forward to because I actually listened to some of their music. They have a new album coming out called Locked and Loaded. And I'm going to check that out because they had some, they just sounded really good. Their song Immortal, which is the one song I knew about before they even played it, they dedicated it to the armed forces. And I actually on my Facebook page, I shared it right there from the campground. I thought it was pretty cool. They dedicated the armed forces. Can't do that. And one thing that really got me, that made me mark out, was they did a cover to Rebel Yell, Billy Idol's song, which was pretty cool. So, but yeah, that was some good shit there. Definitely gonna get their album if I don't already have. I might have one of their songs. I'll just download the rest of it if it's out. I don't know if it's out yet or not, but yeah, they're a good band. The next band was a cover band. Like I thought, Red, White, and Crew. They're a Motley Crue cover band. I like Motley Crue. I'm not a big fan of them. I can't stand. I think they're egomaniacal assholes. So I didn't really. We didn't stick around for them. As soon as Eve to Adam got done, my wife was hungry. She's pregnant. She's already tired after two bands. She was tired, wanting to go back. So we went back to the campsite. And like I said, when they started playing, I could hear the music playing as day, clear as day from my camper. And it just sounded like a cover band. And that's not all you can say about it. So. But yeah, but that was it for them. Day one, we actually went across there, got in there as soon as the crowd opened, checked out some vendors and everything, and then a band called Truck Fighters went on Jägermeister stage. Honestly, didn't even go listen to them. Trivium was next on, was the first kick off the Rebellion stage. Went over there for a little bit, like I'm not a big Trivium fan, listened to a couple songs, took off, but the thing about the layout of this Carolina Rebellion was, you could actually see all, there's some points where you could see all three stages. So even if you weren't at the stage, you could really hear the music going on. And if a band was playing on the Rebellion stage, they were showing the video and the sound was playing on the Carolina stage, like double Titantron thing they had there. So either way, you ain't gonna miss what's playing. So after a couple of songs, we walked over to the vendors of the Carolina stage just to kind of see how they're doing, how they were on that side, and it worked out pretty good. So, but the first band we actually sat and listened to was Adelita's Way, who I've seen them at Rock in the Range a couple times, so this is like the third time I've seen them. Always fantastic live. Even all the songs you don't know, you feel like you know them, and they have good crowd interaction. So one of my favorite performances of the weekend. Yeah, no more I can say about that, but Elliot's Way, yeah, I'll continue to listen to him. Good, fun band. So that was it. Listened to Devour the Day a little bit in the Jäger stage. Didn't stay too long because I wanted to get over a good area for Blackstone Cherry. But did listen to a little bit of Devour the Day. Then I got over for Blackstone Cherry. Like I said before, just good old-fashioned rock and roll music, Blackstone Cherry. They're a throwback rock and roll band. That's all they really are. And they're fantastic. Completely fantastic. Thing that made me mark out for them was they actually did a few verses of Roadhouse Blues, which for a while there, I'm thinking, are they going to play the whole damn song? I fucking think it'll be awesome. But they didn't, but it was pretty cool. But overall, just a good fucking show by those guys. Like they always do. The next band, which was on the Carolina stage, was Black Label Society. And I remember we saw them 2 years ago, Rock on the Range. I can't remember, but I forgot. again that Zach Wilde has zero crowd interaction. Which, I mean, that's something as easy as, hey, how you doing, Charlotte, or fucking Concord, or whatever. People kept saying Charlotte all weekend. You know, oh, we're Black Label Society, thanks for coming out, you guys rock. Okay, and then play music, and then say, hey, this song is going to do this. No, he just went from song to song to song, then jetted. And then my wife reminded me, that's what they did at Rock in the Range. So that always let me, that means me to believe that they're all about the fucking money. Yeah, I might be wrong, but I there's a reason why I never buy any of their albums. Yeah, they're hard metal, but I'm not, like I said, it really threw me off again. I just forgot about it to begin with, but yeah, disappointing in that. Disappointing in Zach Wilde, Black Label Society. So I would never pay to go see just them. Next band up on the Jaeger shit stage was King. I honestly did not even pay attention to him. Anyone playing that stage, you had to be there to really hear it. You could hear it from a distance, but you couldn't, unless you, they're just the way the wind was moving, is if you could really understand the lyrics and everything, but I didn't really watch them. Then I went and saw Killswitch Engage over on the Carolina stage. Oh, I say again, the Rebellion stage. While I'm standing in line, got in line early to meet Chris Jericho and Fozzy, and that tent to do that was right next to the stage, so I got to sit there and listen to Killswitch. They did play CM Punk's old music. The first thing I said when that music started, I yelled, "Fuck you, Punk!" And the guy, and obviously most of the people in the line with me to meet Chris Jericho are wrestling fans, and they're like, "Why do you say that?" I go, "He's a fucking asshole. He shit on everybody." But Killswitch, they killed it. Another great performance for the one of the best again for the weekend. Really, really enjoyed it. Next up, Anthrax was on the Carolina stage, but I was just amped because I was gonna meet Chris Jericho and Fozzy. Chris Jericho was the main one I wanted to meet. I was gonna, one by hook or crook, by crook, I was gonna get my picture taken with Chris Jericho. Been a big Chris Jericho fan since his days in WCW, when he did the Man of 1004 holds, when he came over and did his opening intro with The Rock, all the way up until his last one when he fucking got shit on in the Fandango match. But I tell you what, my opinion of Chris Jericho has changed 3,000% after this weekend, and after I told Paul what happened, this story, he even thought the same thing. So we're in line. They come out. Now, for one thing, Jericho's bigger than I thought he was. I guess it's because I don't always see a lot of people in there. You know, they look smaller on TV, but when you can see him, yeah, he actually had some arms on him. So you come into the tent, and you go from right to left. The three of the band members are on the right, and he's on the far left. There's like four people in front of me to go through. The first two people, one is a kid, asked to take his picture with him. He says, sure. Takes the picture with the kid, and then the next guy says, can I get a picture too? He gets a picture. The guy barely steps back behind, not even behind the table, behind the front of the table. And he's like, no, you got to be in the front table. And the guy's like that. Took the picture. And then just for I'm sitting there talking to my wife. And I look over. And for some reason, the security guy and Jericho are walking to the back. Now the sun's shining through the back of the tent. And you see him back there just ripping this guy a new asshole. The security guy. This poor security guy, probably getting paid minimum wage to stand there and protect you. I say that with quotes. From us unruly fans, and he's sitting there just chewing this guy out. I could not believe it. So when he came back out, the next guy said, can I get a picture? And he said, this is when the security guy said, no, you can't, no pictures, no more pictures. So I just could not fucking believe, I couldn't hear what he was chewing him out about, but that right there just proved me what he was doing. So I went through there, the rest of his band, it's cool, like, hey man, how you doing? Hey, nice to meet you. I go, hey, Chris. I told him, hey, Chris, nice to meet you, man. Been a big fan for years. Oh, I was wearing my support the tattooed military shirt. He goes, oh, support tattooed military, huh? Okay, cool. And that was all he said. And I said, I talked about how I was a big fan. He never acknowledged it, never did nothing. And I walked away. Didn't acknowledge anything my wife said to him, and we both walked away, and we were just blown away. He just kind of read the shirt, like he was going through the motions, like he pretty much like he knew that we, that what I saw. I mean, at the time I was just thinking, okay, maybe it's not a big deal, but no, he was a total dick. So, you know, I was talking to a guy in line, and Jericho, he always says, if you listen to his podcast, which I don't anymore, he talks about how he wants to keep the two separate, his wrestling life and his Fozzy life. Now I'm gonna tell you in a minute why he's a fucking hypocrite, because I'm gonna get to that in a minute. When I get to the Fozzy set, I'm gonna tell you he's a fucking hypocrite. But right there you can see why I was a little pissed off. I didn't get my paycheck with Jericho, which would have been really cool. And I have a varied opinion. I don't know. So I skipped Anthrax to meet Chris Jericho, which is okay because I'm not a big Anthrax. I actually caught the end of Anthrax set. So then I went and listened to a little bit of Thousand Foot Crutch over on the Jaeger stage. Then got back over to the Rebellion stage and listened to Seether kill it because Seether is awesome live again. Seether, me and my wife keep talking. They remind me a lot about Shinedown. We're big Shinedown fans, so they were awesome. And then we came back over to the Carolina stage and got to listen to Volbeat again for like the third straight year, I think it is, something like that. We've seen them three straight years. And Volbeat's good. They're awesome. They do a Johnny Cash song, and you know, it's just, it's pretty awesome. While they were actually performing, I was standing, I was still giving Jericho a chance and was trying to, you know, get close to the stage for his performance. So they come out. We start, I mean, during this time, people are getting Y2J chants. We even got a Yes chant going. Whole bunch of stuff going. So then when they finally came out, everybody got a Y2J chant. So, Y2J Yes. And, oh, and the Julian, the, Let's Go Cena, Cena Sucks chants. We did that. They're doing that too. It was pretty funny. Now, first of all, my opinion of Fozzy was not good to begin with. I've never been a big fan. I don't think Jericho's got a great voice, and I just think his music's shit. But they sucked. Straight up sucked. And then here's the thing that got me. Jericho came out wearing that same fucking jacket, the lighter up jacket that changes colors and everything that he wore at WrestleMania last year against Fandango. But this is a motherfucker that wants to say he wants to keep the two separate, but he comes out doing the exact same shit. And then on top of that, I happen to get on his Facebook page, and his Facebook page, the Fozzy Facebook page, and the headliner with a picture of them performing at Carolina Rebellion was Rebellion is Jericho, which is a wrestling thing, right? So it's already known that, Fozzy would not be a thing if it was not for Chris Jericho. Not because he's a good singer, but because of who he is. Because he's a wrestler. And he got into wrestling. And then he went on fucking Dancing with the Stars because he's a fucking sellout. So I'm done with Chris Jericho. The band Fozzy sucks, mainly because of him. The musicians are okay. The music is all right. But the lyrics suck. Not just lyrics, but the way it sounds sucks. He did on his last album, he did a song called Sandpaper with M Shadows. It was so noticeable of who was when Shadows was singing, because it actually sounded decent. So either way, I say Fozzy sucks, but it's all Chris Jericho. The only reason he's got a band and they're even halfway a name is because he was a wrestler. So he wants to keep it two separate. There was in between the first second song, we got a big Y2J chant going. Y2J chant going. He's out there going, no, Fozzy, Fozzy. He's trying to get everybody to say Fozzy. Again, he's a fucking hypocrite. But yeah, I think I'm done with my Chris Jericho chant. I'm done with him. I'm going to tweet this show to him. Hopefully he catches a big part of it, because it's actually going to be in the title. Jericho sucks balls. Something, I'm going to come up with something before I post this online. So, but that's it. I'm done with the Fozzy, because after that, the show got awesome. Because the two headliners were Rob Zombie and Avenged Sevenfold, two of my favorite bands. I say Rob Zombie's a band, but yeah, Rob Zombie on the Rebellion stage, and then A7X closed it out on the Carolina stage. First, Rob Zombie. Certain bands that I really freaking loved, I have my iPod in my hand right now. That's where I took my notes on during the weekend. But I also took down the their set list. So, real quick, Rob Zombie started off with American Band. We're an American Band, the cover, Grand Funk Railroad cover song. And then Super Beasts, then American Witch, Living Dead Girl, then Dead City Radio, More Human Than Human, Sick Bubblegum, Pussy Liquor, which is one of his most underrated songs, I think. It's just fucking awesome. And then Never Gonna Stop, which was Edge's old theme music. So, that was pretty cool. Which I remember now I think about it, he's done it before. He covered Alice Cooper's School's Out. It was actually partial, but he's done it before. That was pretty cool. He did Thunderkiss 65, and then here's something that I noticed, that the only guy that did one this weekend, he did an encore. He came out in an encore and did Dragula. Fan fucking tastic. Rob Zombie's always fucking great live. He fucking killed it. I would pay, and I have paid, to see him, you know, as a headliner. So, just fantastic. So then we had to rush over to get to Avenged Sevenfold. which we didn't, you know, we walked over there and even and got to stand there for a few minutes before they actually started. So the thing I love about this compared to Rock on the Range is you have music playing at all times. Whereas at Rock on the Range, they only have one main stage. So, you know, when you get down to the last two or three bands after they shut down the side stages, let's say, like I'm sure it's going to be with Rob Zombie and then Avenged Sevenfold. Rob Zombie will perform, and then you'll get a half hour of just standing there. No music playing, but the piped-in music they got going on the sides before, so they can tear down Rob Zombies and set up Avenged Sevenfold. You don't get that Carolina Rebellion. You just do a big fucking... If you just want to listen to music all day, stay away from the vendors, maybe grab some food on the way, you just do a circle all day long, and you can hit every single band. And then you can even hit some food on the way there because there's food places set up to help you do that. So the setup is phenomenal. The field is shitty because it was... you know, sand and, you know, dead grass, and we're hacking it up all weekend. But yeah, that setup, their setup was phenomenal, which is in part of my notes. I'm going to go over miscellaneous notes for later. So, but yeah, Rob Zombie killed it again. Then Sevenfold, they came out Shepherd of Fire. Then they did Critical Acclaim, Backcountry, Hell of the King, Doing Time, Buried Alive, Fictions. They did Fiction, Nightmare, Afterlife, This Means War, and then they closed it off with Unholy Confessions. No encore, which is a little disappointed with, but when you do 10 songs, it don't really fucking matter. 10 songs? 11 songs, sorry. So it's pretty much the same as an encore, but they just didn't do an encore. It's 11 straight songs. At one point, before they did Fiction, they talked about Jimmy the Rev dying. Was it before Fiction, or is it? That might have been before Buried Alive, which M. Shadow said on a Jericho interview, did on Jericho's podcast, that his favorite song to perform is Buried Alive. But he was talking about the Rev, and then the whole crowd erupted in a Rev chant. And it actually got M. Shadow's all choked up, and you could see him. He had to stop, pull away, and everything. It was a pretty cool moment. But the only grab I had was no encore, but you know what? You do 11 songs, it really don't fucking matter. They hit all their main ones anyway. A couple ones they probably could have gotten in there, but, you know, overall... Ben Sample always kills it, and they had a lot of pyro and fireworks and shit. So you know, good show, fantastic way to close out Saturday. Those last two bands, there's some bands I was looking forward to see, you know, disappointed in, and then two of my favorites closed out the day and just had me freaking wanting more. So it was a good time. I enjoyed it. So that was day one. We got back, walked back to the camper, which by the way is about a 20-minute walk from you, which is not really good when you have a pregnant wife. But you know what? We went to sleep as soon as we got back, though. I'll tell you that much. So then, day two. The first two bands that kick off day two were Gemini Syndrome and Nothing More. Hell Yeah was the first real band we wanted to see on the Carolina stage at 2. So we figured we can sleep in, get some extra sleep, get some food in our stomachs, drink some water so we can save some money on food because food there is outrageous. $9 a beer. Tell you this, I didn't drink this weekend. I had two beers that I brought with me on a Friday night, and I never drank the rest of the weekend. So, but we got down there. We left at about 1:20, walked up there, caught the, we could hear Gemini Syndrome as we were getting up there. They didn't sound too great. And then my wife even reminded me that they weren't that great last time we saw them anyway, at Rock on the Range. But, and then we got over, tried listening to Nothing More, but like I said, you guys might like these bands, but I don't care for them. Nothing More was nothing special to me. We ended up walking over and getting ready for Hell Yeah, and you know, like I said before, you could hear them and see them on that stage anyway. So, on the little Titantron thing, they go in there. Then Hell Yeah came out. I was actually one of the only merchandise I bought this weekend that was band specific was a shirt I'm actually wearing right now. It was Hell Yeah's Blood for Blood shirt. It's a pretty cool looking shirt. I bought a hoodie and I bought a ticket from one of those little bootleg guys. Not a ticket, but a shirt from a bootleg guy. And my wife got a shirt and everything. But I did buy an Avenged Sevenfold bandana. I didn't forget about that. But Hell Yeah, a shirt was the only one I did buy. So that was pretty cool. Oh shit. Okay, make sure I didn't fuck anything up. Nope. Okay, I'm good. So Hell Yeah. Hell Yeah's set list went like this. It was, they did Cowboy Way, Matter of Time, Blood for Blood, Drink, Drink, Drunk, and You Wouldn't Know, and then they finished it off with the song, Hell Yeah. Just phenomenal. Hell Yeah is great. Chad Gray gets you going the entire fucking time, and like I said, just phenomenal. I would love to see Hell Yeah as headliner so we could see everything they play. I would do it, but they never headline. I don't understand why they're not higher in the bill. Maybe I'm the only one that likes them, but I wish they were higher up on the bill. I know why they never go to Rock on the Range, because it's in Columbus. That's where Dimebag got killed. But like I said, anyways, phenomenal, phenomenal. The next band was 12 Foot Ninja, who we tried listening to, but they're just horrible. After that, we went and saw Fuel on the Rebellion stage. For some reason, got through like 3 songs, couldn't listen to them anymore. Walked back over to the Carolina stage to get ready for Theory of a Dead Man. But we heard the rest of Fuel over by Theory of a Dead Man. We were actually looking at some stuff at some vendors over there anyway. So Theory of a Dead Man performed. Those guys are fantastic. Again, it just seemed like they're shorter than usual. Usually I feel like they go on longer. I don't know if they had a smaller block this time or what, but still good performance by them. Then caught a little bit of Red Light King on the Jaeger stage. They were all right. And then we went for Alter Bridge over on the Rebellion stage. And Miles Kennedy is one of my favorite musicians right now, because he does his, the project with Slash and the Conspirators. And you know, they're good. I just don't think they do enough hard songs for that kind of festival, but I still like them. I still love Alter Bridge. They're great. I'm not saying they're bad. I just think for the crowd that you're doing, you gotta do maybe do a little more harder, or I don't know. But after Alter Bridge, A Day to Remember was on Carolina stage. Those guys were big by a lot of people there, but I tried listening to them. I just could not get into them. Like, that's just me. But yeah, it is what it is. The next one was Memphis May Fire on the Jaeger stage. I didn't even get a chance to get over there because I wanted to get over for a good spot for Stained. Didn't even really hear him. So got over for Stained on the Rebellion stage. And it really sounds like this band is just mailing it in. I love them to death. I love all their music. I love how they switched around. They got some metalcore shit in there. They got some, you know, rustic freaking rock in there, you know. Outside is one of my favorite songs of all time. But it just seems like these guys don't get along anymore. I thought that 2 years ago at Rock on the Range. To me, it really looks like they're just trying to play out their contract with the record company so they can go their own way. I might be wrong. I hope I am. But they don't even care. Aaron Lewis, is he so hung up on his country thing that he doesn't care? But at one point, he got really pissed off at the crowd, at some of the guys, because he was watching all these crowd surfers, and every time a woman was going to crowd surf, she was getting her shit ripped off, and guys were grabbing her tits and grabbing her pussy and everything, and he got pissed off at how he goes, "You would embarrass your parents," and my wife even says this: if you're a female, you're wearing a bikini, and you're going crowd surfing, you're begging to get your shit grabbed. Might not be the right answer, but that's just the way that my wife feels, and I agree with her. So. But, you know, it was still pretty cool to see him take a stand against that. A couple notes about Stained I did have down here was their harder edge of their newest album, back to their first couple albums. So their newest album is really good. I do have it. I don't listen to it as much, but I will now. And then at the end, instead of saying, "Thank you, Carolina, whatever, bye-bye," he said, "Enjoy the rest of your evening." That was it. It was like, "See you later, see you next time," or... It was just, I was thinking, what kind of fucking finish is that? And I know a lot of people around me are like, what the fuck kind of shit was that? And that's how everyone felt. So, they're decent. I can't say I've ever thought Stained stole a show of the 4 times I've seen them now. I don't think they really have, but, you know, they are what you think of it. 311 was next, and this is when I think... Yeah, I went and got on the Wi-Fi and started watching Extreme Rules. I watched, this is where I watched Triple Threat match. For Extreme Rules was during 311 set. They're hot garbage. I can't stand them. I didn't like them in the 90s. I don't like them now. So it is what it is. But after that, I got to go watch one of my favorite bands out there right now, Five Finger Death Punch. And real quick, I'll go over their set list. They start off Under and Over It, then Burn It Down, Hard to See, Lift Me Up, Bad Company. The thing about Bad Company, every time they perform that song, he comes out with a flag, asks who's in the military, who's been in the military, raise your hands, gives huge props to the military. This guy is, Ivan Moody is phenomenal. But that was just for that one. They did Burn Motherfucker. During Burn Motherfucker, he brought a bunch of little kids up on the stage and kept trying to get them to say the lyrics, "Burn, motherfucker, burn." And the first three kids were like, "Burn, burn." As the band's playing this, they're saying, "Burn, burn." Then he got the last one, and the little kid goes, "Burn, motherfucker, burn." And the whole crowd lost. You could hear everybody fucking laughing their ass off. It was hilarious seeing a little kid say that. After the song was over, he pointed over there and he goes, "That little fucker's grounded." So that was a really cool thing there. Next song they played was "Remember Everything," which is the acoustic version, which I like better than the album version. If you have one of their last two albums and you have that live version, that's pretty much what they played there, and it's awesome. It just sounds better. Next song was "Coming Down," then "Never Enough," then "Mama Said Knock You Out," which was awesome. And then they finished it off again with "The Bleeding," another great song. Also, I saw during it, not a lot of people were happy that Kid Rock was going to be there, but I'll tell you this, Ivan Moody gave a huge shout out to Kid Rock, saying that it was just awesome for him to be there and everything. So, you know, I like Kid Rock. It was cool to see someone do that. But Five Finger Death Punch, a couple little notes on them. I've seen them, I think it was my third time, maybe my fourth time. I think the third time. But this is a band that you know legitimately loves their fan base. And because all he says in between every song, even during songs, is how much he loves everybody, how much he appreciates their support, how much that they wouldn't be there if it wasn't for all of us. He's now, you know, everyone's got a name for their peeps, you know, like they call us Hellions. Hell yeah, calls people Hellions. Well, he even said before he played Bad Company is that the Five Finger Death Punch fan base would all be known as Bad Company, which is pretty cool. But I'm telling you, Five Finger Death Punch, they put on a phenomenal show. Easily the best of the weekend. To me, they were number one. Yeah, sure, Ben Sinful was up there, and so was, you know, Hell Yeah, and, you know, and Rob Zombie, and even Adelie's Way, Blackstone Cherry. Those are bands that were up there as my favorite performers of the weekend. But Five Finger Death Punch, you can't beat them. Just phenomenal. The love they have for their fans is, I can't say it enough. I would love to see them again. He announced during it that he's doing a tour in the fall. He's going to be touring with Hell Yeah, Volbeat, and Nothing More. I said, but what sucks is they're not coming anywhere around here. The closest they're coming to is up in near Washington, D.C., at Virginia. So about 5 hours away. Who knows? Might go up to it. You never know. Excuse me for a second. Got to take a little drink. But, yeah. Phenomenal. Then the weekend closed out with Kid Rock. You know, the thing that we are worried about, you know, like I said earlier about Alter Bridge, is just don't play too much of the newer shit. If you're going to play the newer shit, play the ones that people know, because the crowd will eat them alive. Because these festivals are mainly metalheads that come to these festivals. But he didn't. For the first, everything up until the last three songs, they played old Kid Rock, Ball, Ball with a Ball. He closed out with Ball with a Ball. But all the other good shit, Cocky, all that good stuff. Overall, good performance, good way to close out the weekend. Five Finger Death Punch would have been a better closer, though. Just saying. And they would have done a fucking encore. There's no encore there. But he did close out with Ball with a Ball, which is pretty cool. So I think that was it for that. But just some miscellaneous notes. In the camping ground, the general store there is vastly overpriced. I paid $6 for a can of fucking mayonnaise. You know, like the spray kind. Not even a big one. A little smaller ones. $9 for a beer. Already went through that. It's just garbage. That's why I didn't drink this weekend. I just didn't want to pay that much for beer. I reiterate this too. The setup is so much better than Rock on the Range. You're just a big circle. Rockin' Park, which I still say is the best festival I've been to those 2 years I went. Their setup is not as good as Rock and Rebellion, but the camping and everything, and the fact that you can come and go as you want, makes it one of the best. Because basically, when we're at Rockin' Park, we'd be able to set our tent up, drink, go to a couple bands. If there are some shitty bands we didn't want to watch, we could go back to our tents, drink some more. We didn't have to pay all the prices for the alcohol there, which we still did at times because they had some good drinks. But because Germany, but overall, I mean, just the setup was way better. fat chicks wearing little to no clothing. This was such. It seemed like all the hot chicks this weekend were wearing more clothing than the fat girls, showing off their fucking flab and their stretch marks. It was disgusting. Wearing bikinis. Ugh. I mean, I'm not one to talk because I'm a big guy. You know, I'm not fat, but I'm hefty. But Jesus Christ, I know when to put clothes on. Trust me. This is disgusting. I did make a video. I had a video of an old lady dancing in the VIP area. If you ever see old people dance, it's hilarious. They do that little one arm in the air and they're just like clap their hands. I'm gonna post it because it was fucking funny as shit. I'll put it on the Facebook page if I can get to it. The something I know is Pabst Blue Ribbon. Was here. They were at Rock on the Range last year. I tried drinking it, threw it up. It was disgusting. But they're $6 a beer compared to the $9 you pay for the Bud Light and the Budweiser and all that stuff. Excuse me. So I saw a lot of people drinking it because it was $3 fucking cheaper. And I just thought that was just a little tidbit to throw in there. I think it pissed me off. And this was something that kind of got me too. But both days start off with the national anthem. And no matter where I was at, I would stop. Even the second day I was coming into the stadium, stopped, took my hat off, crossed my hand ahead over my heart, the national anthem. Because I'm a patriotic person. I'm in the military on top of that. And the first day I did it, standing in line. But nobody stops. Everybody keeps doing what they're doing. They don't care. Joking, making fucking jokes. But the hypocrisy of people is during the five-finger death punch salute, talk about, you know, we brought the new American flag out. You have all these same people who were basically not sitting still for the national anthem are the same ones who are getting a USA, USA chant going on during Five Finger Death Punch. Just a little tidbit, kind of annoyed the hell out of me. And the one of my biggest knocks, besides the fat chicks wearing nothing during this festival, was the fact that they did not have enough trash cans around. I was guilty of throwing my own trash on the ground sometimes, but the reason for it is because there's not enough trash cans. There's none. At first I started searching for trash cans, but they were so few and far in between that I just didn't feel like I had to wait. And I understand, but the point of it, after each day, the ground was so fucking littered with garbage, worse than it was at Rock on the Range or even Rock and Park. And those Germans are dirty over there, but I can't blame people because there's just no trash cans. So that's just the last little tidbit there. But overall, great weekend. Had a lot of fun. Having a pregnant wife, even with her being just 2 months pregnant, didn't really help because I never once even saw a mosh pit. And I like to get into mosh pits. I like to try to crowd surf once or twice. Didn't get a chance to do it. I never got close enough. And part of that was each day had 40,000 motherfucking people. And unlike Rock on the Range, for all 40,000 people had field seats. At Rock and Park, Rock on the Range, only 20,000 or so had field seats. So you only had to go through so many people. But here you had to go through 40,000 motherfucking people to get closer to the stage. Which you can't fault people for that. But I mean, I took some pictures this weekend where you could just see the fucking amount of people that are there. That Carolina Rebellion made their profile picture a shot from a helicopter. I actually remember when that helicopter was flying around too. I remember seeing it. They were taking pictures during that time of the festival, and it was just jam packed with people. So if I could say anything to the people doing it, if you're listening, try to widen it out a little bit. Bring in some more vendors too. I mean, that was one thing Rock on the Range has on Carolina Rebellion is there's a lot more vendors. I like to go around and check out all the hippie shit and all that other good crap they sell there. They just seem like they didn't have as much as they do at Rock on the Range. So, but that's it, you know. More drink options too. I drink Sprite all weekend. That's the only thing I could stomach. I tried drinking a Coke once, couldn't drink it. But just have more options, shit. But that's about it. It was a great weekend. Had a lot of fun. Got a break away from the kids, and then been back to home the last couple of days and getting caught up on what I missed. I missed the Talladega race. Junior fucking decided to lay back for the last couple of laps so he couldn't wreck, and he ended up finishing near the 30s. So, but I read he was my buddy Kyle McCurry, who does the news over there. Interviewed him today for his news station. Son of a bitch. I sent him a message. He never messaged me back. A lucky bastard. But he got to meet, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. I'm fucking jealous. But that's about it. I think I covered everything. The last thing I'm going to hit on, I tweeted it out about an hour and a half ago now. There was this kid that had cancer. Kid looked like he's about 7 or 8, maybe 9. He's a big Daniel Bryan fan. He met Daniel Bryan a little over a year ago when he was doing the tag team thing with Kane. The kid had cancer. They didn't think the kid had much to live. He ended up lasting a whole year, and they videotaped all this stuff with him doing these promos and everything. And before Raw, when little fans there, he got to come out, and he got to knock out Triple H the week before WrestleMania. And then during WrestleMania, when Daniel Bryan won, the first person he went down to go see after his family in the ring, obviously, was he went and talked to that little kid and told him much of inspiration. Anyway, the kid died within the last month. They did a video on it. Very sad. Had me tearing up. Fuck you, Paul. I know you're laughing when you hear this, but it really did have me tearing up. A good story. This shows you more about WWE than people really think. It was sad. Very sad. This kid was funny. He's a legitimate 7-year-old. He told AJ she was crazy. Just straight up told that to her face. That was funny. It's a sad story. If you get a chance, click on the link to that. Go back and watch that. And try not to cry. I know Paul won't, and he'll make fun of me for even saying that I teared up, but you know what? Fuck you. You're a midget. Anyway, that's about it. I'm going to close it off. Did about an hour of talking here. Hope you all enjoyed the Carolina Rebellion talk. I will be back hopefully next week. I go back to work on Friday. Maybe I'll get a little burnout from work. Won't be able to do this for a week or two. So I'm not back next week. We'll be back within the next couple weeks. I had fun doing this. I had fun talking about this today. Hope people, evidently people listen to me. I was looking at the numbers, and thanks for listening, everybody. I really appreciate it. Just like Ivan Moody appreciates everything. And I'm going to close out, finish listening to Burn Motherfucker by my boys in Five Finger Death Punch. And at Cast the Champion is my Twitter handle, at Cast the Champion, at Mike Speed as you want to. Check out NitroCast with Paul. He's fantastic. Yeah, he's good, yeah. But that's about it. You stay classy. Peace.